Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. You're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.5 Radio in the Mat-Su Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site. You can find all of our episodes over on iTunes as well as on mushingradio.com. And make sure you check us out on Facebook and Twitter. Just search for Mushing Radio. Here today, we're going to continue our Iditarod coverage. It is not over by any stretch of the imagination. We still have a lot of folks that we would like to talk to. And one in particular is Cindy Abbott. She is calling in from California. She is the Red Lantern recipient for Iditarod, and she has one heck of a story. For folks that are familiar with Mushing Radio, she was on, I believe, just shortly after last year's race, sometime around this time last year. So you can always go back and listen to those previous interviews. But without any further comment, let's bring up Cindy. Cindy, how's it going today?
So far, so good.
So how are things now getting back into regular life after the Iditarod?
It's pretty tough. First of all, I don't live in Alaska, and so I had to fly back to California to my family and home and work. And I was quite exhausted from this year's Iditarod. It took a tremendous amount of energy this year with this year's conditions. So I'm
right.
Just now, just today was the first day I woke up feeling like I was actually waking up instead of never went to sleep kind of thing.
And it's been, what, about a week and a half now since you finished, is that right?
Let's see, I finished on the, oh gosh, see, you're asking me to use my brain, which doesn't work well. I finished the Sunday of the banquet, which was, I didn't have to look at the calendar.
It's about a week and a half. Here we are at Wednesday. So, if you could, Cindy, for folks that may not know or they've been under the rock for the last couple of weeks and didn't follow Iditarod, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and then we'll jump into your story?
Well, a little bit about myself. Well, oh gosh, that's a long story. In 2010, I summited Mount Everest. A few months before I decided to climb Mount Everest, I was diagnosed with a really rare fatal disease called Wegener's granulomatosis. So I have a banner that I held on the summit of Mount Everest for the National Organization of Rare Disorders because I had this disease for 14 years, but no doctors could diagnose me. So my mission began to spread the word about, hey, when the doctors tell you I don't know, contact this organization and they'll send you to the I don't know doctors. Because I had some damage done to my body. It is a fatal disease, and if they could have caught it sooner. So my mission became to spread the word. So then after Everest, people were like, what are you going to do next, the Alaskan Iditarod? And I thought, well, that's fantastic. I loved adventure, challenge, and stuff. So now my goal became to get that same banner under the arches in Nome. And this last year was my third attempt as a rookie. The first year I started with a broken pelvis but still went 10 days before I had to scratch. And last year I got hurt in the Danzel Gorge and had to scratch again. So this was my third year as a rookie, and I got my banner under the Burled Arch in Nome. So I'm really happy about that.
You're such an inspiration to a lot of folks. I'm sure you saw a lot of the comments on Facebook and other social media about people cheering you along the way. And I have to say that I'm definitely a fan. I've followed you for the last couple of years, and I know you and I ran on a lot of these same trails back here behind my house and Vern's house. So we know each other, at least in terms of mushing and seeing each other out on the trails. But I have to say, Cindy, what an accomplishment to be able to do that, not only in a tough race year like it was this year with those, you know, 30 and 40 and 50 degree temperatures and the new trail and you know, the storms on the coast and all that happened. What was going through your head when you started out this year and you finally realized, I'm going to make it?
Well, when I started, you know, I knew I was going to make it, you know, short of a boulder falling on me or whatever. But I literally, we had a plan. Vern Halter, who I've been working on under his kennel for the last couple of years, when they announced the new race route, we developed a plan because it was a lot different than the past I did Arods. And so we developed a plan, and what I did was I just took every leg of the race, every phase of it, and just ran that part and didn't worry about what was coming up other than when I got there and checked the weather and things. So I ran the Iditarod section by section, you know, and it worked out. I just dealt with what I had to deal with at that moment. And when you said 50 degrees, you have to make sure people realize that was minus 50 degrees and that wasn't counting
course,
wind chill.
Yes. I didn't say minus. I apologize there. So when you say you ran section by section, you hear that a lot from mushers. And for fans that are listening, when you talk about that schedule, is it pretty much, okay, I'm going to run from checkpoint A to checkpoint B, then I'm going to rest for 8 hours or whatever? What was your plan like, and did you have to deviate from that plan very much?
Well, this route had a lot fewer checkpoints, which meant a lot more camping out, just, you know, parking your dog team off the side of the trail and being out there versus being in the comfort of a village.
Right.
So what I did was, because of the bad training that we, you know, the training, we couldn't get those long runs. We'd travel across the state trying to find somewhere with enough snow to train the dogs that we couldn't possibly do these long runs. So we planned accordingly to what our dogs had been trained to, Vern's dog specifically. And then I would start out with that schedule in mind at the beginning of every run. And based on weather conditions, like going into Huslia, I got caught in this huge windstorm with these mountainous snowdrifts, you know, that just took so much energy from my dogs. So I had to change my run-rest schedule based on that because it was much more difficult on the dogs and me. And so, yeah, we had to deviate some based on, you know, Mother Nature. She always wins. If you don't pay attention, you might end up in trouble.
So as you worked your way down the trail, when did you know, you said sort of getting ran over by a boulder, was it really late in the race? Was it mid-race where you thought, wow, we're looking pretty good here and we're going to be able to make it? You know, like you said, you never know what's going to happen down the trail, but at least from my experience, you know that everything's clicking right.
My team they looked so good, of course, from the start, but because of our run-rest cycle, and we trained, as you know, I think you were even in some of the races I was in, the shorter distance races. We trained as everything, all of the races we did, all the training we did, as if we were running the Iditarod. So when I did run the Iditarod, the dogs knew what to expect, which helped tremendously. And so the vets at the checkpoints were commenting on how healthy and happy my dogs were because that's what they'd been doing all season. And so Vern's training schedule that he developed for running these long-distance races is so important because you can't go run a 300-mile race as if it's a 300-mile race and take the dogs on a 1,000-mile race and think they're going to understand the difference.
Right.
So my dogs... They looked awesome the whole time, and they performed awesomely the whole time.
How did you feel about yourself going through? Any injuries this year that may not have been reported? How was your health? How did you rest? How did you fare throughout the event there?
Well, there was some, everybody, I think there was one bubble up ice glacier, I think on the second day, I don't even know where it was, but I think everybody crashed and burned. You could tell by the debris field. You know, I think one of the mushers broke some ribs there and stuff, and I took some bruises. So I sprained some fingers, and you know, but that's called mushing.
Right.
The cold, though, because we were camping out more and we were exposed to, so some people were saying that thermometers were going off the chart at minus 60, thinking it's, you know, minus 75 degrees. I don't know. Frostbite, toes, fingers. But again, you just don't use your fingertips. Use the side of your fingers to booty your dogs. And so, yeah, there was stuff that came up, but I wasn't going to let it stop me. If I could stand, if I could walk, if I could protect those dogs, I was going.
I would say very few people in this world have been outside in that cold of weather. What does that feel like when you're out there exposed, you're on a dog sled, you have on your parka and your ruff and all of that? What is 70 degrees or 50 degrees or whatever it was? You said that the thermometers were bottoming out. What in the world does that feel like in terms of, you know, to our bodies and what we're going through?
I have to say, on one particular run, I had every piece of gear on that I had, and it was as if I was wearing nothing. I was truly shocked at the coldness of it, and quite frankly, I was worried about becoming hypothermic. And you can't sleep in it. You know, normally when we're stopping camping out, you can crawl in your sled and you're, you know, 40 below sleeping bag and get a half hour, 45 minutes of sleep. There was no way to get sleep. So the sleep deprivation and then the cold damage, that was difficult. I think psychologically that got to a lot of mushers. I just ignored it. It just was a fact I had to deal with. I was going to finish this race.
Cindy, can you tell us a little bit about the checkpoint atmosphere for folks that are in the back of the pack? We often hear of all the fanfare and, you know, carnival-like atmosphere of the front runners. What does it feel like when you pull into a checkpoint and you're near the back? What's going on there? Is it the same or is it different?
Oh, it's totally different. They're packing up to leave.
Right, so they're saying hurry up
and
get out of here.
Understandably, because they're going to use the same personnel and move them, you know, the veterinarians and things. They're moving them to a checkpoint further down the trail. And so, you know, coming in last, you know, they're getting ready. They took care of me. I have no complaints there. You know, everything was fine there. But they are, you know, packing up and getting ready to leave to move on to wherever they're moving on to. So it is different, but I sort of like being out there and on my own. I've never traveled with a group of mushers, and, you know, I got to make all my own decisions based on whatever I needed to do for my team, and I sort of liked being by myself.
You know, for fans that are listening, mushing is really a solitary sport, isn't it? Unless you're there with that group, you're out there alone. Whether you're in training or in races, you're pretty much doing your own thing, aren't you?
Yeah, but you know what? You're not alone because you have those wonderful dogs. And
well,
my dogs,
yeah.
They all love hugs and kisses all the time. I'd pull into a checkpoint, Robert, and we were just, you know, we just had the hardest run. And my dogs would be like, I mean, still, I didn't even unbooty them, and they'd be on their backs, rolling on their backs, scratching their backs, smiling, legs flailing in the air, wanting their bellies rubbed. You know, you're not alone out there. It's awesome being out there with those dogs.
It is. It's a special experience, and you know, that's why I do it, and I think that's why we all do it. It's that bond that we get with those 10, 12, 14, 16 amazing athletes that we're with. Cindy, so let's talk about coming into Nome, you know, your final run from safety into Nome. All of this work and preparation, as you mentioned, from 2010, and here we are, 2015, a whole lot of time on the runners was I'm sure, in a different perspective than you know. What were you feeling at that last 30 miles or so?
It was pretty awesome when I went to the safety checkpoint because, you know, then I knew I had 22 miles to go. Big, big hill to climb still, but, you know, with the dogs and me both running up the hill. And it was so funny because I came over the hill and I was looking down. You could see Nome in the very, very distance. And I see these a person, and then I go, oh, it's a person and a photographer, and I'm like, okay, you know, that, you know. So I run up, and sure enough, it was Vern and Aaron, the teacher on the trail, were right there, Vern runs up and gives me a big hug, and Aaron's taking pictures and stuff. So it was like coming out of the wilderness, and all of a sudden there's these two people there, and it's Vern and Aaron. That was sort of Twilight Zone. But then I kept going down the trail, and, you know, we got mile and mile closer, and it became surreal. It actually became like, wow, this is it. You know, the finish line's right up there, and it was pretty incredible.
So you crossed the finish line, you've accomplished your goal, and you've been quoted many, many times by saying that that this is definitely harder than Everest. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, it is. For one thing, on Everest, you know, every decision you make is based on yourself or what's best for you or your schedule. But on the Iditarod, every decision I made was based on what's best for my dogs. And so I had to put what I wanted or needed aside because they always, always came first. And so and that's a lot of responsibility, taking care of those dogs and keeping them safe. Plus, mentally and physically, you know, I don't think there's no way for people to understand what it is like to cross the Alaskan wilderness alone. You are out there alone. Yes, you have trackers and they know where you are, but as many mushers know, you have to be able to deal with surviving if something goes wrong, you know, while you're out there. So for me, the Iditarod was definitely much more difficult than climbing Everest. And not to put down Everest. Everest is very, very difficult.
What was your finishing time, Cindy?
I finished in 13 days, 11 hours, 19 minutes, and 51 seconds. And my goal was to finish by 13 and a half days, so I beat it by just a few minutes.
That is awesome. Very cool. And congratulations for sure. And if you could, a little bit of perspective, how long did it take you to summit Everest from the time that you got to base camp or whatever you do? I don't know exactly the procedure. From that time until you reached the top?
From the time I got to base camp to reaching the top was 51 days.
Wow.
And then it took another 3 to get down.
Wow. That has to be like you said, it's an entirely different experience for sure. Sitting back on it a week and a half later, what were you feeling then when you finished Everest compared to what you're feeling now a week and a half after Iditarod?
It was actually pretty similar, very physically and mentally spent. The same kind of feeling I had after the Iditarod, just, you know, the lack of sleep, the physical and mental and emotional drain. You don't even realize it when you're doing it because you're doing what you need to be doing at the time. But after the fact, pretty worn down. But with the Iditarod, it's pretty cool because now I'm the first female to have finished summit of Mount Everest and finished the Iditarod. I got the Nord banner both places, which means so much to me. And so to be involved in something like the Iditarod, to have the honor of being involved in that sport is amazing to me. Visiting the villages, all the people involved, all the volunteers involved, the other mushers, the other dogs. It is such a unique experience that I am so lucky I got to do. I really, Bernhalter's help was just, I can't even express how much his help meant to me in getting the dogs ready and me ready. It's pretty awesome.
And like you said, you live in California, so there was a lot of travel back and forth coming up here and doing runs. And I know when you were on the air the last time, you would spend time up here, then you would have to fly back and work for a couple of weeks, and you'd fly back up. And it was just kind of a constant juggling of back and forth. Was that what happening this year, or was it a little bit different?
This year was a little different. I spent more time up in Alaska. I had to. We just had to find places to run and things. So I lived in two different worlds. I describe it. And this time my husband came up and visited me more and sort of toted the line at the home more. So I was able to be in Alaska more, which helped a lot, because it's just Vern and I. You know, we don't have all these handlers and other people that help. It's just Vern and I, and occasionally we'd call in some friends and they'd help us. But, you know, that's the best way. You do the work, you train the dogs, you run the dogs, you know. So it was different this year and much more focused.
So you had mentioned that you wanted to raise awareness for the rare disease, I assume, research and things like that. You accomplished that goal. You had mentioned you got the banner both on Everest and Under the Arch. How do you feel about that? I know that's got to be a special accomplishment for you and for the folks that that you're raising awareness for. Did you get your message across, do you think?
I'm working on that now. We're working. I don't know if you know, we have a documentary that we are producing. And we were waiting for the finishing clip, which was me crossing the finish line. So now my director's trying to get that documentary put together. It's a feature-length documentary. And so that hopefully will be hitting maybe network TV, who knows what. But so that will help a lot with raising awareness. Also a foundation, a nice group of people heard my story. And, you know, the Iditarod's not cheap, and for somebody who has to lease the team and things financially, to run it three times followed by, you know, Everest was a financial burden. So anyway, they actually created a foundation called the Katmai Lodge Alaska Foundation and Markoff Foundation for Disease and Disability Awareness, and I became the recipient of their first grant, and so they helped me pay for some of the costs of running the Iditarod. I don't know if people know that the winner of the Iditarod doesn't win enough to pay to run the Iditarod.
Exactly. And everybody behind him, it's progressively less.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, to run three times. So that was very nice of these folks to start this foundation for me, and they are now funding other people's dreams to help them make them come true. And so that was really fortunate, because that the bank account was getting low. I don't care about money, really. I'm not going to die with money. I'm going to spend money. And if my life's mission now is to raise rare disease awareness, then that's great. And that's where my money will go. So I'm again, like I said, getting the Nord banner across that, under that Burl Arch, is so amazing. In fact, they're going to give me a special award in Washington, D.C., a Portrait of Courage Award, I guess, next month.
Wow.
I'm sort of excited about that.
That is very cool. If we could backstep just a little bit, Cindy, we're talking to Cindy Abbott today, the recipient of the Red Lantern in this year's Iditarod, as well as the only woman to both summit Everest and finish the Iditarod. Cindy, let's talk a little bit about that Red Lantern. You finished right after the finisher's banquet, you know, everything was wrapping up there, and then you finished, and then you got a banquet of your own. I didn't know about that banquet. Is that a normal occurrence, or is that just something that they did because you missed the original banquet?
Well, Mark Norman's always said during the meeting, the race marshal, that if they need to have a second banquet or a third banquet, they will. But they haven't done so in so many years. And so I guess they would have had the second banquet, you know, so let's just say three of us were out on the trail and missed the first banquet. They would have had a second banquet. It just happened I was the only one out on the trail. The other mushers actually made it in time for the banquet. So it turned into sort of the Red Lantern banquet, but traditionally they would have a second banquet if all the mushers didn't come in time.
Can you tell our folks that are listening what is the significance of the Red Lantern? What does it mean? And what happens right there under the arch with that Red Lantern recipient? What do you do there?
The Red Lantern is pretty cool. The name of it is, it's the Wells Fargo Red Lantern for Perseverance. And it symbolizes the tenacity, the perseverance, the toughness, the never give up, the, you know, attitude of that last musher to get in, you know, to do whatever it takes to get across that finish line. Then when you cross the finish line, up on the arch, they have a widow's lantern burning, as they did in past when the seamen were out at sea. They would leave a light burning so that they could find their way back to shore. And so the lantern was burning, and then when the last musher comes in, who is me, they have the honor of extinguishing the widow's lantern. So that was really cool, actually. I got to turn off the lights, signaling that all mushers are in, and the 2015 Iditarod is officially over. And then I got a symbolic red lantern, that's full-size red lantern, as my award. So it's really cool.
You know, I didn't know, and I don't know if you know either, but do you know that star there in the Eagle River, Chugiak area? They turned that on right around Christmas, and they extinguished that when the Red Lantern winter crosses Nome, too.
Oh, no, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I just heard about that this winter. So two places did the light turn off for you, there at the arch, as well as that star that burns there on the mountain that you can see as you're coming into the valley from Anchorage.
Oh, that's cool. I'm so happy that I actually got Red Lantern. You know, after 3 years of trying and all the, you know, the problems I've had, and it really does, it's a symbol of what I've gone through to get there. So to me, it's really important, that lantern.
Well, you know, a lot of people are proud of you for sure, and as I said, I'm definitely a fan, and I'm so glad to have you on, and I wish you much success. So I have two more questions for you. First one is, what is your website, and what can people find there? And then lastly, what's next for Cindy?
My website is reachingbeyondtheclouds.com, and I'm also on Facebook. I post a lot of pictures there. And then what's next? My husband hates when people ask that. Right now I'm just trying to recover from the Iditarod, but I would, and this is serious, I really would like to take that Nord banner to the moon and walk on the moon. And no joke, there's a company in L.A. called SpaceX that has manned space vehicles. The owner wants to go to Mars, and I'm hoping maybe he might take me by the moon and let me take a little walk first. But that's what I would really like to do, is take that banner to the moon.
That would be such a cool accomplishment. And I know you had mentioned that on your previous episode, because back then you weren't thinking about Iditarod again. I remember you saying, you know, I think I might be done here. And then a couple of weeks, maybe a month or two later, I saw that you had announced that you're going to come back and be ready to rock and roll up here again. So, Cindy, a great accomplishment. I'm so glad that you finally were able to finish. And I wish you much success on whatever you're doing next, whether you're going to the moon or Mars or whatever's happening. I'm sure that you'll be able to make it.
Thanks, Robert.
Cindy Abbott today on Mushing Radio. We're just about out of time. We'll make sure we pass along some links to Cindy's episode as soon as we get it up here on the radio. Cindy, thank you very much. Stay safe out there and be well, okay?
Thanks, Robert. Take care.
Thank you. Cindy Abbott, our guest today. We'll see you guys next time. Goodbye.